Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the one and only Sean Sports Talk podcast. I'm trying to get back on a consistent schedule again. This is episode number 423. We got lots to talk about. There has been more details added to the Shohei Ohtani fiasco extravaganza. Football, basketball, the whole deal. But we're going to start off with some college football. For the first time since Joe Shiesty Burrow in 2019, an LSU quarterback has won the Heisman Trophy. Tigers signal caller Jaden Daniels claimed the 2023 Heisman Trophy on Saturday night, beating out Oregon quarterback Bo Nix, Washington quarterback Michael Penix Jr., and Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. So I thought it was well-deserved for Jaden Daniels, to be honest. He's only the third LSU player in history to win the Heisman, joining Burrow and Billy Cannon, who won in 1959. He received 503 first-place votes. Michael Penix Jr. received 292 first-place votes. Bo Nix got 51. Marvin Harrison Jr. got 20. Jordan Travis got 8. Jalen Milroe with 3. Blake Corum with 3. And J.J. McCarthy, Ollie Gordon II, and Cody Schrader all got one first-place vote each. He's also the seventh quarterback to claim the award since 2016, joining Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Joe Burrow, Bryce Young, and Caleb Williams. All of those guys are in the NFL. Caleb Williams obviously will be very soon. College football fans were quick to hype up Daniels and deem him the rightful Heisman winner, saying his win was well-deserved. I mean, it really was. He had one of the most electrifying seasons that college football has ever seen, in my opinion. He was first in total offense, passing touchdowns responsible for, yards per pass attempt, yards per play, rushing yards by a quarterback, and he has the highest pass efficiency rating in FBS history. So an unbelievable season from Jaden Daniels, a well-deserved Heisman Trophy in my opinion. He also won the 2023 SEC Offensive Player of the Year Award, put together a tremendous 2023 season that saw his 2024 NFL draft stock rise, no doubt. The 22-year-old led LSU to a 9-3 record while completing 72.2% of his passes. That is extremely high, for 3,812 yards and 40 touchdowns against only 4 interceptions in 12 games. Video game numbers. He also displayed his dual threat abilities while rushing for 1,134 yards and 10 rushing touchdowns. While the Tigers failed to clinch a berth in the college football playoff, LSU will face Wisconsin in the 2024 Reliant Quest Bowl on New Year's Day at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, thanks to Daniels' efforts this season. Daniels began his college career at Arizona State University before transferring to LSU ahead of the 2022 season. His career at Arizona was lackluster, and he began to turn heads in his first season with the Tigers in 2022. Following a standout career with LSU, Daniels is now, quote, trending toward being a first-round pick in the 2024 draft, per Mel Kiper Jr., who is ESPN's draft guru. Bleacher Report's NFL scouting department has Daniels listed as the third best quarterback available in the 2024 draft class, behind USC's Caleb Williams and UNC's Drake May, and the number 40 prospect overall. Adding the Heisman Trophy to his list of achievements should only make him that much more attractive to NFL teams in the 2024 NFL draft. We'll just have to wait and see where Jaden Daniels goes, to what team. Let's talk about some more football, more at the quarterback position. Joe Flacco is a starter once again. The veteran quarterback will start for the remainder of the Cleveland Browns season, head coach Kevin Stefanski said on Sunday. Flacco led the Browns to a 31-27 victory over the Jacksonville Jaguars when he recorded 311 yards for 3 touchdowns and an interception. The 38-year-old quarterback signed with the Browns on November 20th after starting quarterback Deshaun Watson suffered a season-ending shoulder injury. Flacco's next start will come Sunday against the Chicago Bears. The win over the Jaguars marked Flacco's second straight start after he got the nod December 3rd for the Browns' 36-19 Week 13 loss to the Los Angeles Rams. Flacco passed for 254 yards, 2 scores, and an interception in his Browns debut. Quote, you expect him to get better as he gets more comfortable with our system, with our players, those type of things, Stefanski said about the veteran quarterback after Sunday's win. Stefanski is choosing to go with Flacco over rookie quarterback Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who has passed for 429 yards, 1 touchdown, and 4 interceptions in 5 appearances, including 3 starts this season. The highlight of Thompson-Robinson's season came when he led the drive toward a last-minute game-winning Week 10 field goal against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Browns also chose Flacco over P.J. Walker, who last started during a Week 12 loss against the Denver Broncos, Cleveland waived Walker Saturday in order to elevate Flacco to the active roster. The Browns improved to 8-5 on the season with their win over the Jaguars, enough for the New York Times, the upshot, to give them an 87% chance of making the playoffs. You never know. I could see the Browns, with their very solid defense, making a potential deep playoff run with Joe Flacco as their quarterback. I can see it. Cleveland's playoff spot is far from guaranteed, though. The Browns are one of eight teams in the AFC playoff hunt with either 7 or 8 wins. Flacco's Week 15 performance against the Bears will be key to helping secure the team's ticket to its second postseason appearance in 21 seasons and their first since 2020, when Baker Mayfield was the quarterback. We got more quarterbacks to talk about. This was very unfortunate for me for Daily Fantasy, as well as my fantasy football team. Los Angeles Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert fractured his right index finger during Sunday's Week 14 game against the Denver Broncos. Head coach Brandon Staley said after the game, there is currently no timetable for the quarterback. So Staley said they will know in the next few days. Herbert had been ruled out for the game due to a right finger injury. The quarterback will now have a short week to return to the field, with the Chargers scheduled to face the Las Vegas Raiders on Thursday. Quote, it's something that we'll know more about as the week goes on, Herbert said, per the Los Angeles Times. If there's any chance to play, I'll do everything I can to be out there. I'm going to do everything I can in the treatment room to get back to 100%. Herbert's hand was hurt following a second quarter hit from Broncos defensive end Zach Allen. He was 9 of 17 passing for 96 yards before exiting and was replaced by Easton Stick. The fourth-year quarterback suffered a fractured middle finger in his left non-throwing hand during Week 4's win over the Raiders, but remained in the game. He's off to an excellent start to the 2023 season, throwing for 3,038 yards and 20 touchdowns against only 6 interceptions, while adding 228 yards and 3 rushing touchdowns on the ground. Herbert spent nearly the entire 2022 season playing through injuries. He suffered a fractured ribcage in a Week 2 game against the Kansas City Chiefs, and later a torn labrum that resulted in offseason surgery on his left shoulder. While Herbert did not miss any games as a result of the injuries, his performance was clearly diminished. The Chargers will hope history will not repeat itself the remainder of 2023, with Herbert again dealing with injuries that could linger for some time. So hopefully his recovery goes well. That's all I can say. And we got more quarterbacks to talk about. The Houston Texans were without quarterback C.J. Stroud for the final minutes of its Week 14 matchup against the New York Jets. Stroud left the game during the fourth quarter, and the team announced shortly after that he was being evaluated for a concussion and was questionable to return. Following the game, Texans head coach DeMeco Ryan said that Stroud had entered the concussion protocol. Stroud was 10 of 23 for 91 yards when he left the game, and the Texans were down 24-6 of the Jets, who would go on to win the game 30-6. Notably, fellow 2023 first-round pick Will Anderson Jr. also left the game in the fourth quarter and was questionable to return with an ankle injury. Stroud has been sensational for the Texans in 2023. He's thrown for 3,631 yards and 20 touchdowns against only 5 interceptions and appears to be a top contender for the Offensive Rookie of the Year award. He has helped the Texans remain in the playoff hunt, and an extended injury absence could hurt the team's chances of crashing the postseason. Davis Mills entered the game in Stroud's absence. He spent the 2021 and 2022 seasons as Houston's starter and compiled a disappointing record of 5-19-1. Let's see, what do we got next? Let's talk about some more football. This was very unfortunate. Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson is out of the hospital and will travel with the team after exiting Sunday's game against the Las Vegas Raiders with a chest injury, according to ESPN. Chest internal injury is what Kevin O'Connell called it. Feel pretty encouraged about the early news, he said. The Vikings have a short week heading into Saturday's game at the Bengals. After being ruled out of the game, Jefferson was taken to the hospital out of precaution, per Ben Gosling of the Star Tribune. Jefferson, who was playing for the first time after missing the previous 7 games, recorded 2 catches for 27 yards before exiting in the second quarter. He also took a hard hit to the chest area on his second reception. Jefferson appeared in the first 5 games of the 2023 season before suffering a right hamstring injury in a Week 5 loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. The 24-year-old missed 7 games before being activated off injured reserve ahead of Sunday's matchup against the Las Vegas Raiders. Minnesota opened his 21-day practice window on November 8th, so his activation on November 28th came as little surprise. Jefferson was solid through the first 5 games of the season, catching 36 passes for 571 yards and 3 touchdowns. The LSU product rejoined the Vikings team that is in the thick of the playoff race with a 6-6 record. He was playing with a new quarterback in Josh Dobbs after Kirk Cousins was ruled out for the season after tearing his Achilles in Week 8. Jefferson would be one of Dobbs' top targets moving forward alongside tight end TJ Hawkinson if he manages to stay healthy. While Jefferson may not come close to the 1,800 receiving mark he put up last season, it's still possible that he'll clear the 1,000-yard mark for the fourth straight season. We got to talk about the Cowboys and what they did to the Eagles last night. Dak Prescott shined during the Dallas Cowboys' 33-13 win over the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football. Prescott dissected the Eagles' defense, throwing for 271 yards and two touchdowns while completing passes to six different receivers. It marked his sixth game of the season, throwing multiple touchdown passes with zero interceptions. Prescott added 11 more yards on the ground, avenging Dallas' 28-23 loss to the Eagles in Week 9. Fans were so impressed with his accurate showing that they are now calling for Dak Prescott to win the MVP, and as of now, he might be one of the favorites alongside perhaps Jalen Hurts. Yeah, Dak Prescott is the favorite to win MVP at plus 175 right now. Tight end Jake Ferguson led the Cowboys with 72 receiving yards, while CeeDee Lamb chipped in with 71 of his own. I mean, he's always great, and a touchdown to open the game scoring. Dallas recorded 394 yards as a team, racking up 24 first downs. Even the Cowboys special teams unit was dominant, with kicker Brandon Aubrey connecting on field goals of 59 and 60 yards, respectively. He's the first kicker to make a 59 and 60 yard field goal in the same game. Dallas is now 10-3 after this win, putting them in first place in the NFC East due to the Cowboys owning a better divisional record than the Eagles do. So the Cowboys have sole possession currently of first place in those standings. Let's look at the playoff picture now. The Baltimore Ravens became the first AFC team to reach 10 wins on a walk-off punt return touchdown in overtime from Tylan Wallace. The Ravens moved ahead of the Miami Dolphins for at least 24 hours in the race for home field advantage in the AFC. More on the Dolphins later. The Ravens received some help in that competition from the Buffalo Bills, who held on to win in the late window over the Kansas City Chiefs. The number one spot in the NFC also changed hands on Sunday as the 49ers took over from the Eagles. Niners picked up their second win of the season against the Seahawks, while the Eagles dropped to 10-3 with the loss to the Cowboys on Sunday night. The wild card races in each conference are more crowded than the home field advantage battles after Sunday's Week 14 games. Six teams are tied at 7-6 in the AFC, with the Steelers and Colts at the top of that mess. Over in the NFC, the Vikings hold a slight edge on the 6-6 Packers, and four teams are at 6-7. So, the AFC playoff picture, the division leaders are the 10-3 Baltimore Ravens, 9-3 Miami Dolphins, 8-4 Kansas City Chiefs, and 8-5 Jacksonville Jaguars. In the wild card race, you got the 8-5 Cleveland Browns, the Pittsburgh Steelers, Indianapolis Colts, Houston Texans, Denver Broncos, Cincinnati Bengals, and Buffalo Bills are all 7-6. Baltimore reached the 10-win mark in the most dramatic game of the Week 14 early window. The Ravens used Wallace's game-winning punt return touchdown to fend off the Rams in overtime. John Harbaugh's team allowed 410 total yards and failed to close out the Rams in the fourth quarter. Los Angeles used a 7-play, 57-yard drive to set up a game-tying field goal with 7 seconds left in the fourth quarter. Baltimore found a way to win, and that allowed them to temporarily take over the top spot in the AFC over the Miami Dolphins. Kansas City and Jacksonville both lost on Sunday to make home field advantage a two-team competition at the moment. The Chiefs are ahead of the Jaguars for the number 3 seed on a head-to-head tiebreaker. Buffalo and Cleveland's respective wins over Kansas City and Jacksonville affected the wild card race as well. The Browns have a one-game advantage over the rest of the pack at 8-5, while Buffalo moved into the group of six teams at 7-6. Pittsburgh and Indianapolis hold the two best conference records among the 7-6 group. Excuse me. And the Steelers are in front of the Colts thanks to a head-to-head victory. Now the NFC. The division leaders, you got the 10-3 San Francisco 49ers, the 10-3 Philadelphia Eagles, 9-4 Detroit Lions, and the abysmal NFC South, the 6-7 Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And in the wild card race, you got the 10-3 Dallas Cowboys, 7-6 Minnesota Vikings, 6-6 Green Bay Packers, and the Los Angeles Rams, Seattle Seahawks, Atlanta Falcons, and New Orleans Saints are all 6-7. San Francisco vaulted over Philadelphia in the home field advantage fight on Sunday. The 49ers kept rolling with another double-digit win over the Seahawks, which hurt their NFC West rivals' playoff hopes in the process. The Eagles dropped a second straight game to a Super Bowl contender in the NFC and fell out of the top four seeds for the moment. Philadelphia can still win the NFC East if they win out because it has the opportunity to win two more games within the conference. That would be the determining tiebreaker if the Eagles and Cowboys win out. Tampa Bay entered the NFC playoff conversation with a road win over the Falcons. Sunday's win split the regular season series between the Bucs and Falcons, but the Bucs currently have control of first place thanks to a better conference record than the Falcons and its Week 4 head-to-head win over the Saints. New Orleans trails Atlanta at the back end of the wild card race because of its loss to the Falcons in Week 12. The Buccaneers host the Saints in Week 17, and the Falcons visit New Orleans in Week 18. The NFC South race will likely be decided by those two matchups. The Green Bay Packers can join the Minnesota Vikings at 7-6 with a Monday night win over the New York Giants. That would give the two NFC North sides a one-game edge on the four teams stuck at 6-7. So we'll see more on those games later. Let's see, what do we got now? Eagles got stomped by the Cowboys. We know that. Let's talk about Justin Herbert some more. Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert is, quote, very likely to have surgery on his fractured right index finger on Tuesday, according to Adam Schefter of ESPN. Whether Herbert will have any chance to be able to return this season will be determined by the surgery. Schefter previously reported Herbert was not expected to play in Thursday's game against the Las Vegas Raiders due to the injury. Chargers quarterback Justin Herbert is not expected to play Thursday night versus the Raiders due to his fractured right index finger, and he will be consulting with Dr. Stephen Shin to determine the extent of the injury and how much time he will miss, per source. Los Angeles coach Brandon Staley told reporters that Herbert will see, quote, a couple hand specialists on Monday. So that is the latest on Justin Herbert. Hopefully he has a successful recovery. Let's talk about some basketball. After the conclusion of the NBA in-season tournament this past weekend, the league unveiled the all-tournament team on Monday. The tournament champion Los Angeles Lakers were represented by LeBron James and Anthony Davis, Phoenix Suns star Kevin Durant, Milwaukee Bucks star Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Indiana Pacers star Tyrese Halliburton rounded out the team. I thought those were all well-deserved. The Lakers won the inaugural NBA Cup on Saturday with a 123-109 victory over the Pacers. AD exploded for 41 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 blocks in the win. LeBron James, who added 24 points, 11 rebounds, and 4 assists, was named the MVP after averaging 26.4 points, 8 rebounds, and 7.6 assists while shooting 56.8% from the floor. LeBron, AD, Giannis, and Halliburton were all unanimous selections to the all-tournament team. KD received 7 out of the 20 votes, while 6 other players received votes but didn't make the cut. Durant averaged 34.5 points in 4 tournament games. Antetokounmpo helped lead the Bucks to the semifinals and averaged 29 points, 8.8 rebounds, and 5.8 assists across 6 games. However, the biggest star to emerge in the in-season tournament was the young Tyrese Halliburton. The 23-year-old opened the eyes across the league with his playmaking and his efficiency. He averaged 26.7 points and a league-best 13.3 assists, while shooting 52.4% from the floor and 42.5% from 3 over the course of the tournament. It can be expected that the in-season tournament is here to stay following the success of its first iteration. It will be fun to see what will happen in the future. Let's talk about Shohei Ohtani a little bit. Shohei Ohtani won't be leaving Los Angeles for the 2024 season, but that is surely of little solace for Angels fans. Ohtani took to Instagram on Monday to thank fans for their support, with many of the interactions in the video coming with Angels fans. The Dodgers, meanwhile, officially announced the signing of Ohtani on Monday with a unique anime-themed video. The team released an official statement with the signing as well. Ohtani spent the first 6 years of his Major League Baseball career hitting and pitching for the Angels as the sport's most unique star. His ability to dominate the game in multiple ways helped build a resume that includes 2 American League MVP awards, an American League Rookie of the Year, 2 Silver Sluggers, and 3 All-Star selections, yet he never made the playoffs during his tenure with the Angels. That will definitely change now that he agreed to a 10-year, $700 million deal with the Los Angeles Dodgers in free agency. The Dodgers have been to the playoffs in 11 straight seasons and advanced to the World Series 3 times in that span. They are once again on the short list of contenders heading into the 2024 campaign, especially after adding arguably the world's best player in Shohei Ohtani. So pretty crazy there. Let's talk about some more NBA. The Los Angeles Lakers will honor their NBA in-season tournament title with a banner after all. The Athletic noted the team revealed it will raise a, quote, unique add-a-year in-season tournament banner ahead of their home game against the New York Knicks on December 18th. The Lakers will differentiate the banner from the ones honoring the 17 championships by making it a different shape and color. It will also be just one banner for space to add future years should the purple and gold win it again in the future. This comes after Arash Merkazi reported on Saturday that the team did not plan on recognizing the title with a banner because it has only raised banners for championships and retired numbers for Hall of Fame players. That it was the Lakers who won the inaugural in-season tournament raised questions about whether there would be a banner. After all, they and the Boston Celtics are the most decorated franchises in NBA history. They are championship or bust almost every season, and they have long reserved the banner space for the sport's ultimate accomplishment, While other teams recognized accomplishments such as division and conference crowns, ultimately the team decided to recognize the unique win. Los Angeles earned the title with a victory over the Indiana Pacers in Saturday's NBA in-season tournament championship, while Tyrese Haliburton was the breakout star of the tournament and helped lead the Pacers to the title game. The veteran Lakers controlled play with the championship hanging in the balance. AD was unstoppable, as I keep saying, with 41 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 blocks, while LeBron added 24 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, and 2 steals. LeBron was recognized as the in-season tournament MVP for his overall efforts. This obviously doesn't change the Lakers' larger goal of winning an 18th championship this season, but the banner will be there to remind the franchise of its success in the inaugural in-season tournament, regardless of what happens in the playoffs. So, awesome stuff as a Laker fan. Let's switch gears back to some football. UNC quarterback and potential number one overall NFL draft pick Drake May has announced that he will be going pro. The 6'4", 230-pound May is a redshirt sophomore out of Charlotte, North Carolina. He became a collegiate superstar during his first year as UNC starter in 2022, amassing 45 total touchdowns, 38 passing, 7 rushing, and a completing 66.2% of his passes for 4,321 yards, 8.4 yards per attempt. He also rushed for 698 yards as well. May followed that campaign with 33 total touchdowns, 24 passing, 9 rushing. The latest NFL draft big board, November 29th, from Bleacher Report's NFL scouting department, places May at number 3 overall in the class of 2024 and first among quarterbacks. He's received a grade of 9.3 out of 10, behind only Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr., 9.7, and Georgia tight end Brock Bowers, 9.3. That's valid. The scouting department called May the most pro-ready and most accurate passer in the draft class. Quote, overall, May is a supremely talented passer. He has the athleticism, arm talent, and baseline processing skills to become a weapon at the next level. All he needs to do is cut out some of the doing too much plays. Maybe he has the skill set to fit in any system and develop into a star. May looks like a potential superstar based on his 2 seasons at school. He'll undoubtedly be selected at or near the top of the upcoming NFL draft. The question at this point is whether he will be number one overall, as the debate among analysts between him and USC's Caleb Williams figures to dominate pre-draft talk all winter and spring. We got to talk about Ohtani. This is crazy. Shohei Ohtani will reportedly have to wait for more than a decade to collect the vast majority of his new 10-year, $700 million contract with the Los Angeles Dodgers. According to The Athletic, Ohtani will defer $68 million of his $70 million per year until after the contract is over. That means the money will be paid out from 2034 to 2043 without interest. The reasoning is so the Dodgers can continue adding to their roster with the hopes of competing for championships in the immediate future. While that is quite the financial sacrifice from the superstar in the coming years, it was noted he was the ones who suggested it. What's more, he is making up approximately $50 million annually on off-field endorsements and endeavors, which will surely ease the burden of waiting for the majority of his money from his new contract. From the Dodgers' perspective, this will help them further work around the competitive balance tax and add pitchers such as Yoshinobu Yamamoto or Tyler Glasnow this offseason. ESPN's Jeff Passan called the development a, quote, huge discount for the Dodgers, since the overall hit on the contract in terms of the competitive balance tax will be approximately $46 million per season. Ohtani is clearly ready to start competing for World Series titles if he was willing to make such drastic deferrals on his contract. While he was one of the best players in the league throughout the 6 years on the Angels, the team never made the playoffs once. The Dodgers are well positioned to not only make the playoffs but compete for multiple championships in the coming years. Their lineup will feature MVP candidates in Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman, as well as notable players such as Max Muncy and Will Smith. For now, pitching remains a question mark since Ohtani will not take the mound in 2024 following elbow surgery. Dodgers legend Clayton Kershaw is also a free agent, and the team's ability to add a potential top-notch starter like Yamamoto or Glasnow could make the difference between a title or early playoff exit. That is why Ohtani's decision to defer so much of his contract is so notable, as the Dodgers are expected to be factors in the pursuit of multiple other star players. So there you have it. Let's talk about Monday Night Football. Tommy DeVito delivered another stellar performance in his fourth career start as the New York Giants defeated the Green Bay Packers 24-22 on Monday Night Football. DeVito completed 81% of his passes for 158 yards and a touchdown, dissecting the Packers' defense on the ground as well. He recorded 71 rushing yards on 10 attempts against Green Bay after entering the game with 83 career rushing yards. After the Packers took a late one-point lead with less than 2 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, DeVito engineered a drive that resulted in a game-winning field goal by Randy Bullock as time expired. NFL fans were amazed by the incredible play of the former undrafted free agent. Something about these kind of guys. Although he committed a costly turnover that allowed the Packers to take a late one-point lead, Saquon Barkley helped the Giants sustain drives with several strong runs throughout the night. Barkley finished with 101 all-purpose yards, getting opportunities to make plays both on the ground and through the air. After entering the contest with one rushing touchdown this season, the 26-year-old found the end zone twice by the end of the night. So you'd love to see that for Mr. Saquon Barkley. DeVito has now thrown 8 touchdowns against only 3 interceptions on the year. While Barkley has amassed 783 rushing yards this season, the Giants moved to 5-8 following this victory. There was a bigger shock. The Miami Dolphins usually only look fraudulent against teams with winning records, but they changed that up on Monday. The 5-8 Tennessee Titans picked up their first road win of the season with a 28-27 victory at Hard Rock Stadium. Making the result even more unbelievable is the fact that the visitors essentially handed the Dolphins 2 free touchdowns in the fourth quarter with critical mistakes and still overcame a 14-point deficit in the final 3 minutes to earn this win. Miami fell to 9-4 with its first home loss of the season and saw an opportunity to move into the AFC's number one seed slip right through its fingers. The offense was stagnant for much of the game, which was partially due to Tyreek Hill being in and out of the lineup because of an ankle injury. That excuse can only go so far against the Titans team playing out the string of a lost season, though, as Tua Tagovailoa was sacked 5 times and lost a fumble during a poor showing. I don't think Tua should be MVP. It seemed like the Dolphins were going to luck themselves into a win when Eric Gehrer muffed a punt in a tie game with fewer than 7 minutes remaining. That led to a Raheem Mostert touchdown on a short field drive, as did a fumbled pitch play from Will Levis to Derrick Henry on Tennessee's next possession. Just like that, a tie game turned into a 14-point Dolphins lead in the final minutes. It should have been enough for the win, but the defense went missing in action and allowed a 9-play, 75-yard drive that took fewer than 2 minutes and ended with a DeAndre Hopkins touchdown and Nick Westbrook ICNI two-pointer. 1-3 and out later from the listless Dolphins offense, and the Titans got the ball back and marched right down the field to score what proved to be the game-winning touchdown on a Derrick Henry run. Miami still had one more opportunity to win it, but showed little urgency and eventually turned it over on downs in a fitting ending to a game where the offense was largely non-existent, save for 2 short field drives after the Titans' mistakes. The Dolphins' only other touchdown came when a Zach Sealer pick-6 in the first half. They will look to turn things around when they host the New York Jets in their next matchup. And let's see, what else do we got? That is all we have, ladies and gentlemen, for this episode of the Sean Sports Talk Podcast. This was episode number 423. Thank you guys so much for listening. I love you guys, and I'm out. Peace.